Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. It's a rom-com and an action adventure and a drama of pursuit and thrills. Above all, it's wedding season. Hulu's new scripted jack of many genres. Creator writer Oliver Littleton and executive producer Brooke Posh join me next. Also ahead, T-Plus goes forward to Peacock, an interactive Disney Plus, our new classic trivia question, and farewell, Bernard Shaw. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. I present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Google Podcasts, and other leading podcast platforms. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Welcome aboard on this primetime Emmy Award afternoon, 78 degrees at the top of the hour here in New York, and we welcome you to the program all about TV's current and future. First of three episodes we are doing this week. Hope all of you had a fantastic weekend. We have a nice program for you according to the next hour, and we invite you to be part of the program. Give us your Emmy thoughts, by the way, a few hours before the happenings happen from Los Angeles on NBC and Peacock. That's 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific. And all you got to do to get involved in the conversation, simple. Dial in with this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, or TuneIn Radio. Or get into our chat room. It's all ready for you. SimonApple04 is the name, and you will find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And remember, anytime you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, or TuneIn screen. Follow the instructions. Other people will be live with you. The creator and writer of Wedding Season, Oliver Littleton, and Emmy nominee, Brooke Posh, he's executive producer, will join us live from London and Los Angeles, respectively, after these news notes. Telemundo is ready to raise the curtain on T+, a new mix of English, bilingual, and Spanish language programming for display on sister NBC Universal-owned venture, Peacock. The opening big attraction is Till Jail Do Us Part, a dramedy about four women and the relationship their hubbies have with organized crime. Kate Del Castillo and Rosalind Sanchez co-star, with Peacock playing the first episode this Thursday. The following 2 weeks, T+ via Peacock will debut La Formula from Brazil and Jose Feliciano Behind This Guitar special. Now, quickies, Issa Rae overseeing comedy series Rap Beat will be back on HBO Max for season 2. Sorry, we cannot say the second word of the title. Otherwise, we would probably be off the air just like that. Televisa Univision promoted Ignacio Meyer to U.S. Network's president, effective today. Meyer was recently overseer of music and non-script entertainment activity at the company. Showtime's latest documentary miniseries, The Lincoln Project, will debut October 7th. Macro Television will go forward with Swordplay, a fantasy drama series taking place in modern-day Los Angeles. Former The Walking Dead and The Shield executive producer Glenn Mazzara, who, by the way, was on this program when he was the executive producer of Lionsgate's TV series version of the Oscar-winning Crash, will showrun this project, created, co-produced, and directed by brothers Jonathan and Josh Baker. And like I said earlier, tonight, the 2022 Primetime Emmy Awards happen live on NBC and Peacock. So far, going into tonight, HBO has 21 Primetime Emmy wins, 2 more than Netflix. And that is news notes for today. Hulu is going into tonight's Emmy Award with a bunch of shows that might just win, like Only Murders in the Building in the comedy category, Pam and Tom in the miniseries category, also Dope Sick, which might win an Emmy for its star, Michael Keaton. And another Hulu show premiered this past Thursday to rave reviews on Rotten Tomatoes. It's called Wedding Season. As we send the tease, it's one part rom-com, one part mystery, one part pursuit a la The Fugitive, one part thrills, and as Boris Karloff used to say, this, my friends, is a thriller. Let's find out all about this show. Joining us live from London, England, the creator and writer, Oliver Littleton. Oliver, congratulations. Welcome to our program.
Thanks, Simon.
And joining both of us live from Los Angeles, she is at the Emmy Awards because she is up for a project, along with the Hulu folks. She is up for an Emmy Award, and she'll talk about that. The executive producer, Brooke Posh. Brooke, welcome in, and congratulations on your Emmy stuff.
Hi, Simon. Thank you.
And why don't you go ahead and say what you're up for in terms of the Emmys tonight?
Yeah, we're up tonight for sketch and variety for our HBO show, Black Lady Sketch Show, created by and showrun by Robin Thede and directed by Bridget Murphy-Stoat, who won the Emmy last week for directing in this category. So we're very excited.
Mm-hmm. Oliver, what kind of reaction have you had so far, either from the critics or the viewers, to Wedding Season?
It seems pretty good so far. It's still like filtering out into the world, but there's been some really nice reviews, and ones that really seem to be getting what we were after. Like I was particularly pleased. There was a review that picked up on kind of After Hours and Something Wild as inspirations, which was some of the things that we talked about a lot in the writers' room.
How did you come to write this and create this? I said in the tease, it's like a jack of all genres. Like, what genre is not in this program?
Well, we haven't been to space yet. Maybe a few seasons down the line. I was going through that period of life that I think a lot of people do of the wedding season, where you know, every weekend over a summer is either a wedding or a bachelor party or a bachelorette party or some combination of sort of all of the above. And it just felt like an interesting time to write about for various reasons. But also, you know, I love the rom-com genre. But the rom-com, you know, like so often falling in love in a rom-com is something that feels kind of comforting and cozy and like a big warm hug. And for me, the process of falling in love has always been feeling kind of sick and sweaty and anxious and terrified. So when we first started talking about the show, we were like, well, how do we do something where falling in love feels like that? And so the idea of kind of crashing the rom-com into the kind of action thriller was what sort of came about then.
When you were putting this together, Oliver, did you have some like influences from people like Alfred Hitchcock or maybe a TV classic series like The Fugitive in mind in putting this together?
Yeah, definitely. When we sort of formed the writers' room for the show, there were a few things that I kind of made people watch, and one of them was Something Wild, the Jonathan Demme movie that I mentioned earlier. But also, we definitely, like North by Northwest and the 39 Steps in particular, in terms of the kind of Hitchcock movies, the Fugitive, more the Harrison Ford version. I don't think I've ever seen the original series, but the movie was very much one that we talked about.
Well, actually, Oliver, there was a number of years ago, NBC did a sort of couple fugitive called Hot Pursuit, which was about a married couple that because of a circumstance they got themselves into, not of their own making, they had to flee and go to different places all over the country, pursued by this person who was trying to like frame them for a murder they didn't commit. So very interesting stuff. Brooke, how did you get involved with this project? It's certainly a very different thing from Black Lady Sketch Show.
Yeah, so I had met the original producers that Ali had attached to from a company called Dancing Ledge, who are our incredible partners. And I went to London and I was talking with the president of the company, Lawrence Bowen, and we were bonding over, you know, shows that mix genres really well. You know, Jax does, we produce Search Party, and we also produce Russian Doll, and, you know, these shows are mixing two genres together. A Search Party is obviously murder mystery along with comedy. And so we were talking about how when you can get two genres and you can find a writer strong enough to have each genre work at a high level, which is what Ali's done with the rom-com and the thriller of this show, how rewarding and fun it is. And after this long conversation and hilariously talking about movies like Hot Pursuit and talking about Hitchcock, he was like, hey, we want to partner and make a really big show. We want some of it to be shot in the UK and some of it to be shot in the US. And would Jax, your company, consider coming on with us to develop and create this really big show that blends these genres and make it purely big? And I read Ali's script on the flight home and landed and called Lawrence and was like, yeah, let's sell this show together.
We've got a dynamic duo here for you this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. From London, we have got the creator and head writer of the new Hulu series Wedding Season, Oliver Littleton. And from Los Angeles, home of tonight's Primetime Emmy Awards, which will be simulcast 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific on NBC and Peacock, we've got executive producer Brooke Posh, whose production company, and she is up for an Emmy Award for, in the variety sketch category, a Black Lady Sketch Show, which has already won two Primetime Emmy Awards this past Labor Day weekend for directing. And they're both with us live this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. We're happy you are with us, too. Simon Abbott, I'm with you live from New Haven, New York. 78 degrees at the top of the hour. If you have a question or comment for either or both of our guests, make a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. First of three episodes we're doing this week. We have two more coming your way, one on Thursday, one on Friday. Coming your way on Thursday, as we speak, 16 Script Zone television stations are launching a brand new daytime program called Afternoon Focus. It's all about people who innovate and who inspire others because of the difference they make in their neck of the nation and the world. We'll have Lorena Ruse, the executive producer of Afternoon Focus. She will be with us on Thursday. Also, we will have the chief business officer of Trusted Media Brands, formerly Juke and Media, the folks behind a number of user-generated content services that are playing on smart TV sets and smart TV devices. They've just launched their latest service. It's called At Home with the Family Handyman. We'll talk to chief business officer Cameron Sellers. And we also hope to have Kalisto Chinchilla. That's the person who founded the New York Latino Film Festival. That first day is today. We're going all week and weekend long here in the Big Apple. Kalisto was supposed to be with us today in our second half hour. We found out late that because of a situation, conflict with a conference session going on later today, Kalisto will not be with us today, but we will have her with, we hope to have that person with us on Thursday's show. It's all coming up that Thursday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow will be televised. Oliver, what was the toughest thing about putting Wedding Season together?
I think it's that mix of genre and it's that mix of tone. Like you know, it's kind of crashing all these things together is my favorite thing to do as a writer, but getting the balance right is definitely tricky because, you know, I think when you're going from something that can hopefully be hilarious to something kind of quite dramatic and earth-shattering, you've got to make sure that balance, you know, it all kind of runs together smoothly. So that was what, I mean, I think I started writing the script 6 years ago and a lot of that process was just like getting the mix of ingredients right.
Mm-hmm. And Brooke, talk about the couple that leads this situation. They're played by Rosa Salazar. And if you don't know who Rosa Salazar is, she is an actress really on the rise. And Gavin Drake. What about them, and what had you and your fellow executive producers and Oliver think, you know what, this is the couple that can pull this off?
Right. Well, Rosa, I've known for years. She has comedy chops, and she also, because of her work on Alita and several other things, she's also great at action. So we were, again, looking for an actor that could be able to handle both of these genres, and, of course, she's just incredibly charming, so she nailed the rom-com part as well. And with Gavin, I tell this joke, but I'd love to hear Ollie say it as well. Like, we were worrying about, at first, our Stefan needed to be someone that maybe wasn't so forwardly attractive, that, you know, would be like, well, of course this woman falls in love with him, and of course, you know, so we were, like, kind of thinking, like, should he be more of a dopey guy and a little bit more easy, you know, to talk to and approachable? But when we met Gavin, we just found him, his past work is incredible, and we found him incredibly magnetic, and we did also great for the action, and then we did a chem test between the two of them, and it's one of those things that as we were just watching it, we were just texting each other of how incredibly connected they are and how believable they are to play Stefan and Katie. Would you say, Ollie?
Did he?
Yeah. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, absolutely. And then something that we found out after the chemistry read as well is that, you know, Gavin's kind of credits are largely like quite serious theatre stuff like Hamlet and things like that. And once we met him and once we kind of dug a little deeper, we discovered he's a real sort of comedy nerd as well and has a kind of sketch group that go to the Edinburgh Festival every year and things like that. So it was really a case of like, where did we find this guy? Like our prayers have been answered.
Yeah. Did either there's two twists off the bat, those have not seen the first episode, that makes this show very unique. One is that these two people meet, they're already married to others, so there's adultery here off the bat. And then the second twist is that when Katie gets married, her husband and her family, to put it mildly, get bumped off. That has to be very interesting to sort of pull two things on it, at least early on.
Sorry, what was the question?
Yeah, it's very interesting that off the bat you have these two twists. One is that these two people meet, and they're both, well, one is about to be married to somebody, that's Rose's character, and Gavin is already married, and then 2 months later, Rose's character, Katie, does get married, but then her family and her hubby both get, or hubby-to-be, both get bumped off.
Yeah, I mean,
and
sort of, sorry?
I was saying,
yes,
a.k.a.,
yes.
Also known as murdered, for folks who don't know what bumped off
means. Yeah, so, I mean, both of those were kind of baked into the idea from the very beginning, and I think we definitely had some nervousness. I remember Lawrence from Dancing Magic at one point being like, does it have to be 9 murders? Does it have to be? And I think we got rid of one. I think it turned out to be 8.
Right.
But you know what they say, you know, go big or go home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then on top of that, Brooke, there is this whole thing about the fact that once these murders happen and both have to sort of scram, get on the lam, not only across England but also across the United States, is that each person thinks the other did it. So you have that other dynamic of, can I trust, you know, I'm with this person on the lam, and B, can I trust the other person?
Right. I think this is where Ollie, and he talked about how obviously this came from a personal place and how, you know, these stories are often told with falling in love where it's just, you know, it's rose petals and it's sweet and it's just all very rom-commy. But for him, as he says, it's just like a sweaty, anxiety, angst-ridden mess. And that's what I love about this. Like, these two are falling in love, but they're also in such a high-pressure situation and they're figuring out, like, who's telling the truth. And so they're constantly just sort of have their backup, which, as I think if we all really think about it, is how relationships start, you know, like you want to dive in, but it's also just like a giant metaphor for like trust and how much are we really telling people and how much are we revealing about ourselves and how much, as when we first started dating, are we sweeping the crazy under the rug? And I think Ollie did that brilliantly with just putting these people who are definitely attracted to each other in a situation of just like, we're in this together, right? Are we? Wait, like, it's like that real feeling you feel when you start dating someone.
It's like, in a way, the defiant one, Sidney Poitier and Tony Curtis, where, like, in pursuit. Oliver, is this your first time doing television or doing television this way?
So I did a show that was on the BBC earlier this year called Cheaters, which hasn't made it to the US yet. But this was definitely a whole different, like a different kettle of fish in terms of, you know, both just, you know, we had 10 times the budget of that show, but also working in quite a US model. I'd never done a writer's room before. And you know, we were really lucky to get to work with Brooke and Jax and her partner Lily, who was in the writer's room sort of every day on season one with us, and so really getting to feel the kind of the much more of a, the kind of US model of making a show was really exciting and really good fun.
What was it like to be in a writer's room? How do you get people to, in their scripts, sort of sign on to your vision and Brooke's vision and the whole vision that both of you create for the show?
I think, like so many things, it's about chemistry in a way. It's and I think when we were meeting writers, in some ways they're, you know, and obviously their scripts are important, but it was more about like, do they feel right for the vibe of the show, and do they feel like they kind of gel with that? And we got really lucky. We have Tammy, Jono, and Louise, who are our writers, are really, you know, they like, it was the most fun I've ever had working. But I think also what I tried to do is, I think sometimes writers end up having the sort of edges smoothed off in their scripts. Whereas, you know, I remember the first TV show I loved being was The X-Files. And one thing I remember about that was like, different episodes like had slightly different flavors. Like you'd sort of watch one and be like, oh, this is a Darren Morgan episode. It's kind of funny, or oh, this, you know, this one's going to be scary because it's from these guys. So you kind of want each one to, you know, each writer to still feel like they've put their stamp on it, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Winning Season premiered on Hulu this past Thursday, and we've got two of the key people involved. The creator and head writer, Oliver Littleton, joining us live from London, and executive producer, Brooke Posh, joining us live from Los Angeles, site of the Primetime Emmy Awards tonight, carried live at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific on NBC and simulcast on Peacock, on smart TV sets and devices everywhere. And they're both with us live this half hour here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Tom and I'm with you from the other side of this country called the U.S. of A. That is New York. You are 79 degrees coming toward the bottom of the hour. You have a question or comment on remaining minutes with both our guests. Make that call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Third and final episode of the week will be coming your way on Friday. And among other things, we'll talk about a project, yes, another project on smart TV sets and smart devices that just started called Very Local. It's from Hearst, where every single one of Hearst stations programs a channel with both local news information and national programming as well. The overseer of this first project, Andrew Fitzgerald, will join us. We'll also talk about a venture called TV Coin. It just received $10 million in funding. It's a platform out to create new television networks and right off the bat get you involved in watching them. The chief executive officer, Yossi Alani, and the chief revenue officer, Gustavo Mara, will both be with us. And 1 week from today, you'll meet one of the kingpin players of true crime television. His name is Scott Weinberger. He has his own production company, and among his credits, the ongoing long-running series on Investigation Discovery ID, On the Case with Paula Zahn. Scott Weinberger, one of our guests, a week from today, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Brooke, how did the pandemic, or this shift from pandemic to endemic, play in making this series? Because you're working with two continents here. You're working with...
Right.
Where Oliver is in Great Britain, and, of course, where you are in the U.S. of A.
Yeah, I mean, I just had to think, Ollie. I'm like, did we end up getting through without a shutdown? We did, right?
I think we had, like, a one-day shutdown when we were in the U.S.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say that the gods were on our side with this one. A lot of our shows were getting shut down. And so, but yeah, I would say that it wasn't, I don't know that either continent really affects the difference of like the protocol. We shot this show when the networks and everyone were still very strict and, you know, limited amount of people on set, masks on set, constant testing. And I have to hand it to our actors who were taking it very seriously and people were going home and not going out. And I think that was like a great chance for everyone to stay healthy. So we, I think, really lucked out with this show in particular in that we didn't have major shutdowns because I would also say, like, the Disney protocols were pretty strict and great and, like, helped keep everyone healthy.
Yeah. Where did you end up filming, in England and in the U.S.?
In
the
U.S.?
In the UK,
sorry.
In the UK, we were mostly based in Manchester, up in the north of England, but we did a couple of weeks in Scotland as well. We get some pretty amazing kind of Scottish landscape in episode 2 and 3. And we did 2 days in London, I think, right at the end. And then, yeah, Brooke, I'll let you handle the US side of things.
Oh, no, we did, LA, and outside of LA and Vegas.
Brooke, you're in Los Angeles for the Primetime Emmys, and you have a Black Lady sketch show to root for, and you're also rooting for the network that's carrying Wedding Season, Hulu. They've got a bunch of shows. As I mentioned before, they're up Only Murders in the Building,
of course,
in the comedy categories, and Dope Sick and Pam and Tommy in the miniseries categories. What's it like to have so many people to root for tonight?
Oh, man, it's fun. It feels like it's a great time in TV. I also have been working in a business for a while, so a lot of my friends that I've come up with in television, like, you know, Paul and Lucia and Ski, who are up for tonight for Hacks, like, those are people that I've been working with forever, like, since season one of Broad City, and it's really fun to have so many people that you've been working with for a while be nominated. And so there's also just a lot to root for different reasons.
Oliver, any Emmy nominees tonight that you're rooting for?
Do you know what? I don't. We've been so busy with the show, I don't remember what's nominated. But Succession. Succession's always great. And I love Hacks as well. We got to borrow a cast member from them. Poppy Liu, who's in Hacks, pops up in Wedding Season for a couple of episodes, and they did a real kind of solid letting her out for a few days to play with us. And so I'm really rooting for them as well.
Yeah, a lot of
and I love Joe
saying,
Sick, and I
maybe
also
another year for Succession. Okay. Go ahead, Brooke. Yeah.
Oh, I was going to say, I'm excited. Hulu had so much great stuff coming out this year. Dope Sick, and then Pam and Tommy, of course, and then also Liz Hannah and Jordana and Showalter have The Dropout, which I just absolutely loved. I thought there was a lot of great
stuff. I love that one, too.
Year.
Yeah.
And Hulu, by the way, also has a new series that is premiering later this month that a lot of people are already targeting as a possibility for next year's Emmy Awards. I'm talking about Reboot, which was created by the master of Modern Family, Stephen Levitan. And I've already seen the trailer. Looks sensational. It's like a show within a show format.
Oh, great.
And already it's gotten some critical buzz.
Great. I haven't seen any of it yet, but I am the DNA of that, of the people on that show means it's going to be good.
Brooke, what's next for you? What is your production company working on for the coming months?
Oh, good question. We're actually bringing out two new shows this fall that we're working with a young creator named Simone Baptiste and a showrunner named Solomon Giorgio on a half-hour comedy called New Money, which is a hilarious comedy on a take I've never heard before. It's a post-reparation take where a brother and a sister get reparation checks, and it's a comedy about what they do with their money. We're also bringing out a new show with Liz Hannah and Amadou Garba that's based on Sue Bird and Diana Taurasi and their time in Russia playing basketball. It's a light hour. So that'll be really fun. And then, we are doing a pilot right now for Hulu on a show called, I don't know if I'm supposed to talk about it, but here we go. we saw the show. anyway, there's these two young comedians coming up that we're very excited to be doing something special with them, Caleb Heron and Holmes Holmes, that have a buddy comedy that takes place in Kansas City that I love. But, yeah, we're bringing a lot of great comedy out. And we also, this year, we launched our first movie at Jack's Fire Island, starring Joel Kim Booster and Bowen Yang, that Andrew Ahn directed. And so we're also have some movies that we'll be announcing soon as well on Jack. So, yeah.
And Oliver, what's ahead for you? And do you see Wedding Season maybe coming into a second season in some fashion? If it's not with the same couple, maybe as an anthology with a new couple dealing with different issues.
Yeah, we definitely hope we'll be back. We've got big plans, and hopefully beyond two as well. We're kind of discussing that at the minute, and that's taken up a lot of time. I'm hoping to do some more Cheaters for the BBC as well, and a few other things that I mostly can't talk about. I'm doing a film for Netflix, but I definitely can't say more than that about that one, I think.
Well, the program is Wedding Season, and it's currently running on Hulu, available on smart TV sets and smart devices everywhere. And if you want more details about the program, here's where you go online, Hulu.com. It's Hulu.com. And again, a number of Hulu series, Only Murders in the Building, Dope Sick, Pam and Tommy, and others. They're up for major categories tonight for the Primetime Emmy Awards 2022 edition, hosted by Kenan Thompson. That's tonight, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, on NBC and Peacock. NBC local broadcast and Peacock smart TV sets and smart devices, and some markets through your local cable system, particularly on Comcast cable systems around the country. And for more details about the Emmy Awards, go to NBC.com or Emmys.com. And yours truly will be in the virtual press room tonight. And looking forward to hopefully having some of the winners. And maybe we get Brooke if a Black Lady Sketch Show does win. Oliver Littleton from London, Brooke Posh from Los Angeles, thank you both very much for a wonderful half hour. Brooke, again, congratulations to you for the nominations for Black Lady and the wins for the Black Lady Sketch Show so far. So good luck tonight where you are in L.A.
Thanks, Simon.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Oliver, take care. Thanks again for being with us.
Thanks so much, Simon.
You got it. All the very best. Take care. Oliver Littleton from London, Brooke Posh from Los Angeles, five of the Primetime Emmy Awards, both joining us live this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. When we come back, our classic trivia question of the week, a brand new question for you, three prizes still in play, and we're going to do a second take on our takeaway of the week, especially given what Bob Chapek, the head of Walt Disney, had to say near the weekend and over the weekend at that D23 Expo in Disneyland, Anaheim, California. And we'll also tell you about two guests, one from Friday and one from today, that were supposed to be with us and why they haven't been with us yet. I'll give you an update on that. And our tribute to CNN outstanding anchor, one of the very best ever, Bernard Shaw. It's all coming up our next half hour, and it begins as we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You listen to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, tunein.com, together reaching over 70 million listeners around the world every month and growing. If you are listening for the most unique, the most unpredictable radio programming around, we got it for you tonight on BTR at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. What do you know? It's the Unpredictable Radio Show. You never know what you're going to hear and how you're going to hear it. The Unpredictable Radio Show, it happens tonight, starts at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, only on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best be charged 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half of our Tomorrow Will Be Televised this Monday afternoon, the afternoon of the Primetime Emmy Awards taking place tonight from Los Angeles. Kenan Thompson hosting. It begins at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, live to all time zones in the United States on NBC and Peacock simultaneously. Coming up in this half hour, we will have some thoughts about where Disney Plus may be headed, courtesy of Bob Chapek, the head of Walt Disney, as sort of a second take on our takeaway of the week last Friday. Plus, we'll have our tribute to Bernard Shaw, the tremendous CNN anchor person who passed away last week. But first, time for our new classic trivia question this week. We're going to pose the question, and if you know the answer, email me at simonapple04@yahoo.com. And if you're first for the correct answer, we have three prizes for you from Nickelodeon, the Loud House Christmas card set, and two best-selling books, both by recent guests of this program. From we have The Unexpected Danny Green by Paul Friedman, and from the noted public relations guru out of Hollywood, Dan Harari, we've got his new bestseller, Flirting with Fame. And because it is Hispanic Heritage Month, it kicks off this week, we're going to do a question tied in with that month. And here it is. Who composed and performed the theme song for the NBC comedy of the 1970s, Chico and the Man? What Grammy-winning performer composed and performed the theme song for the popular NBC series from the 1970s, the comedy Chico and the Man, starring the late actor-comedian, one of the very best, Freddie Prinze, died way too soon, and Jack Albertson playing the man? By the way, this composer not only did the theme song at the opening of the show, he did another theme at the end of the show. One more time, who composed the theme song for Chico and the Man? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and where you're emailing from. And if you're first with the correct answer, you win. And if we don't get a winner by the end of today, we will post the question tomorrow morning first thing on Facebook and on Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum and Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's at UBC Simon TWBT. One more time, here's that question. Who composed and performed the theme song for Chico and the Man? It was on NBC in the early and mid-1970s with Freddie Prinze and Jack Albertson. So get that answer in. First answer that comes in correctly by email, you win. The email you use is simonapple04@yahoo.com. Remember, in order to win, you got to be in. So do so, and all the very best. Before we go any further, we want to bring you up to speed on two guests, one who was supposed to be with us yesterday and one who was supposed to be with us today, and we want to let you know the latest on where they are at. On Friday, our opening guest was supposed to be a man named Jack Marafi. He is the head of an organization called H2O, which is putting together a set of television networks, one of them being the Handball Channel, a single-sport 24/7 service devoted to the sport of handball. We had set the interview up on Thursday. I talked with him directly on the phone. He was excited about coming on Friday. He was going to be our lead guest. Like I said, he's working on several networks, the Handball Channel being the first. And when he was supposed to be on Friday as our first guest in our 3 to 3:30 p.m., that's noon to 12:30 on the West Coast half hour, he wasn't there. Didn't make the sound check, didn't make the program. And we have been trying ever since to reach him to find out what happened, what the source of the breakdown was, and to reschedule him. And as of this very moment, I called him early this afternoon. I have sent an email to him. We have not heard back from him. We will try again before the end of the day, and we hope to reset him, or if not late this week, sometime next week. Now, earlier, we were supposed to have this very half hour, supposed to have the founder of the New York Latino Film Festival, annual event, first time that's being done in person in 3 years since the pandemic in 2020. His name is, or her name is, Calixto Chinchilla, or Calixto Chinchilla, I should say, founder of the New York Latino Film Festival. And she was supposed to be, or he or she was supposed to be on this program this half hour at this very moment. And unfortunately, we learned this afternoon that because of a conflict with a conference session, with a conference taking place throughout this opening day of the festival, Calixto cannot be with us. We are trying to have Calixto on Thursday's episode. We hope in the same half hour, 3:30 to 4 p.m. Eastern. That's 12:30 to 1 p.m. Pacific. And we'll keep it posted on social media if that happens. So they let us know that it probably will happen. And, of course, we will keep you posted. So that's the situation with Calixto Chinchilla. New York Latino Film Festival going on as we speak. It will continue through the week of the weekend. It will be showcasing, I believe, on the weekend. I believe it's Saturday. They will have a program of web and TV series pilots. And they're also talking some TV matters as well in today's conference session that's taking place all afternoon. In addition, while we're on the subject of conferences, I want to give a big shout-out to the folks behind New York City Television Week, also for the first time in 3 years since the pandemic started. It is back in person next 3 days at ETC Studios, located on the corner of Madison Avenue and East 45th Street. And I have to tell you, it's a fantastic facility. I was there for the beginning part of the Advanced Advertising Summit. NYC Television Week is put together by the folks at Broadcasting Cable, Multichannel News, and Parent Future. And we should point out that tomorrow they will have their next TV Summit in person. And then the 20th anniversary of the Hispanic TV Summit, one of the very best conferences in New York all year, put together by a wonderful person, Joe Schramm, through his company, Schramm Marketing. By the way, Joe is also working in Huntington, Long Island, to help get film and TV production in that neck of the New York metropolitan area woods. So that's going to be happening. For more details, by the way, about that event, you can go to www.nyctvweek.com. And I'll be there for tomorrow and Wednesday's all-day sessions. Should be fantastic. A lot of great people going to be there. Also, they'll be doing a 40 under 40 session, a special evening event taking place on Thursday, also the same night as the annual Cable Hall of Fame that will also be taking place in New York. And I believe it's that night, both events taking place in Midtown Manhattan. So that's the deal. And again, stay in touch with us on social media. Let us know, and we'll let you know when the organizer of New York Latino Film Festival will be on show. As I said, we hope it's going to be on Thursday afternoon. Now we're going to do something that we have never done before. We're going to do a take two on our takeaway of the week. Now, for those of you that are new listening to us for the first time, on many of our Friday shows for the last year, we've been doing something called the takeaway of the week, where we showcase a development or two that take place during the week. And we think you should take away from the week these developments because they could very well impact the future of television and the future of how you watch and how you use the tube. Now, originally, our Friday takeaway was on this, what we called, it's an epic TV world after all. And the whole idea was that after all the talk about House of Dragons on HBO and The Lord of the Rings, The Power of Rings, on Amazon Prime Video, they were locked in this dual battle of who's going to win this war of epic television series with millions spent in the bargain. One has to win, one has to lose. As it turns out, programs won. House of Dragons so far in its first month on the air is averaging 10 million people watching opening day Sunday night on HBO, then on HBO Max or on future HBO replays, and ultimately getting around 20, 25 million people a week. And the opening day, September 9th, of Lord of the Rings, as it turned out, or I should say September, the Friday of Liberty weekend, guess what? 25 million people saw the show all around the world, the first episode or two. So bottom line is there is room for lots of epic television shows. There really isn't a war. There isn't one show has to win and one has to lose. They both could work. So that was our original takeaway of the week, and I'm repeating it now because we sort of fumbled it because of the way we introduced it in light of having our opening guest not sort of dropped out. We started it, then we had our conversations that were scheduled for the rest of the show, and we couldn't really sort of tie the, you know, this whole situation together. So that really is it. For all the talk about, like I said, two shows, one had to win, one had to lose. That was the whole dialogue about it. As it turned out, both are winning, and they're doing great up to this point. And already House of Dragon has been renewed for a second season, so is Lord of the Rings. And you better believe that all the prequel machines, sequel machines at both locations, HBO and Prime Video, are already cooking about how they will expand. And let's face it, epic television doesn't have to be just winning. A lot of shows can win. A lot of shows can lose. Amazon, by the way, is another show. Wheel of Time, they introduced last year. Fantasy show did well. Second season, I believe, is coming on either later this year or 2023. So the epic genre is good for lots of players. Anybody can do well, whether the player is known or unknown. So let's not get in this war deal. Let's not, like, somebody has to win, somebody has to lose. Let's just get the shows on the air, and let's see how they do. And you be the judge, and you ought to be the judge. And that's the way it should work. Now, as we were presenting our show Friday, Bob Chapek, the head of Walt Disney, had some things to say in his opening speech at the D23 Expo, Friday, Saturday, and yesterday at Disneyland in Anaheim, California. And during his opening speech on Friday, Chapek had quite a few things to say about the future of Disney Plus, their mega content service. There have been rumors that Chapek had alluded to in the past, saying that somehow Disney is going to make a move in the metaverse or adopt the metaverse in a television way. So for a lot of people, what Chapek had to say at the start of D23 was quite revelatory. Here's exactly what he said, and I quote, "We're imagining a future where Disney Plus isn't just a streaming service, but a platform for next-generation storytelling that blends the physical and digital worlds together in ways only Disney can. One where we can personalize and customize your experience. A future in which sports viewing isn't a passive experience, but a chance to be a part of the action. A future in which our theme parks break through the physical and technological boundaries of today to create experiences that defy expectations and exploration and explanation. Truly defy expectations and exploration and explanations. Explanations. Our amazing team is hard at work creating this future." Unquote. The following day, Chapek had a set of interviews with The Hollywood Reporter, with Variety, The Wrap, Deadline, other entertainment news sources, and websites. And of the bunch, only Deadline followed up on Chapek's comments. Hollywood Reporter didn't, neither did Variety, neither did Wrap. They touched on other topics, but not specifically on what kind of future is Disney Plus going to have. Is it going to be an interactive future, an interactive television future? When I first saw this comment, I thought, wow, Disney Plus may be the first of the mega content services, apart from Netflix, to tie its future to a star of interactive television at a time when interactive television is starting to break loose, whether it's telehealth, whether it's individual programming, whether it's interactive ads, including shoppable ads, whether it's teleeducation, whether it's the launch of game hubs, as Samsung and LG have done over the last month, where you can play games on your television set and either use your voice or voice remote or a joystick that's pointed directly at the screen that you maneuver without having to use a console. No PlayStation, no Atari, no Wii, no Xbox. And when Deadline asked him to clarify his comments about Disney Plus, Chapek said, "What Disney Plus is out to do is to become," and I quote, "an experimental lifestyle platform, a new dimension unleashed." When he's talking about next generation storytelling, he is referring to it as a company-wide initiative where all sides of the company participate, all the Imagineers, all the theme parks, all the producers of the various ABC, ESPN, Freeform, Onyx Collect, and so on and so forth. Disney Channel, all are involved in having Disney Plus become that experimental lifestyle platform. The question is, how is Disney going to do this? So I have a thought here. I would suggest to Bob Chapek and anyone at Disney who's listening is, here's first of all how you do it. Do it through interactive television. Whether it's augmented reality, mixed reality, virtual reality, do it through the television set. Every television set and every smart TV device that's being made and being sold has artificial intelligence built in that is easily upgradable that allows people to control the television set with their voice or with their voice remote. We've got game hubs now. We may have smart home hubs. Samsung's working that home hub, that personal video assistant. That would be interactive. And you're now seeing augmented reality happen. We know it can happen through Portal TV, through Meta, formerly Facebook, which does video chat as well as augmented reality through the television set. You're seeing augmented reality become a factor now on local weather forecasts, on the Weather Channel. WWE programming is using augmented reality to help introduce some of its wrestlers and segments. So we know it can be on the television set. What I'm concerned about is that Disney is already thinking, well, we got to go virtual reality on the headgear, the glasses, the helmets. Well, I have news for you. If you go that way, I have a hunch that you are not going to work it really well. Why? Because virtual reality on the headset, on the goggles, it is at best a small following deal. It is not a mass marketplace. Why? Because the headsets, the helmets, the goggles do not work. Oculus from Meta is not a business. It's not working. So I would suggest that that wonderful Imagineer talent that Disney has, and incidentally, the team at Disney is really hard at work. It's sort of an embryonic stage right now. And I would suggest that interactive TV be front and center of what you are doing. Disney Plus is on the right track toward something really out of this world amazing. And I would think that if Disney Plus is looking at this, so is Apple TV Plus, so is Prime Video and Amazon Freevee, so is Peacock, so is Paramount Plus, or should, so is HBO Max, or should, especially when they bring Discovery Plus together in the fold, so should Topic, so should Crackle, as well as Hulu and Amazon. Everybody should be looking at interactive TV as a main front and center future of television. Hopefully, what Bob Chapek said this weekend at D23 is a clarion call that, hey, if you're going to be a mega content service for the long haul, if you're going to be your ultimate, you have to have that next generation storytelling front and center and televised. I'd love to hear what you have to think about it, and we will be following this up. Anytime Bob Chapek or anybody from Disney who's working on this project with Disney Plus would like to come on the program, we'd love to have them, and we'll keep you posted. And I'd love to hear what you have to think about what Bob Chapek said and how he responded when he was asked to add more or to edify for the folks at Deadline Hollywood Daily. Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Find me on Facebook, LinkedIn, and on Twitter. Okay? Okay. One of these days, changing subjects, somebody or maybe an organization should come up with a Hall of Fame for television journalism. And if that first class is ever put together, some ideas for that first class should be Walter Cronkite, Douglas Edwards, Edward R. Murrow, Nancy Dickerson, Marlene Sanders, Pauline Frederick, Harry Reasoner, Walter Cronkite, Frank Reynolds, Max Robinson, John Chancellor, David Brinkley, Chet Huntley, and don't have that first class be complete without Bernard Shaw. For me, Bernard Shaw was one of the very best anchor people ever. He didn't start out as an anchor man. He started as a reporter and correspondent, first for a local TV station, in Chicago back in 1964, when people of color were not in the broadcast television profession to a great degree, anywhere near a great degree. Then he moved to Washington, where he became a bureau chief and correspondent for Westinghouse Broadcasting Group W. And then his big breakthrough came in 1971 as a Washington correspondent for CBS. I used to watch his program, his reports on the CBS Morning News and sometimes other programming. And he followed that up in 1977, moving from CBS to ABC, and then his major break came as an anchor person when in 1980, June 1st, CNN debuted. And he was named the Washington anchor for Prime News, their major newscast, 8 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time. And off the bat, Bernard Shaw showed you, as he did as a reporter, that he was no nonsense. He was someone who believed that people should get all sides of a story, that it shouldn't be coming with bias or one side to emphasize. It was, let's tell the full story as best we know it, and you, the viewer, can go from there. Bernard Shaw was absolutely marvelous at his job. He was also a terrific interviewer. And, of course, you may remember that debate, the presidential debate, where he asked the question of Michael Dukakis, if your wife or child was raped or murdered, what would you say about the death penalty? His answer turned out to be the coup de grace of his presidential ambition. And in 1991 or 92, Bernard Shaw was in Baghdad when the first Gulf War broke. Shortly after 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time, Bernard Shaw uttered one sentence that changed and transformed the face of CNN forever. The skies over Baghdad have been illuminated. And with his fellow correspondents, Peter Arnett and John Holloman, for days, they were the eyes and ears for us and CNN and the world of what was going on in Baghdad. At one point, David French, the Washington anchor at the time, called them the boys from Baghdad, and they certainly were. And that's when CNN grew up to be a major television medium all its own and a worldwide resource. Bernard Shaw left CNN as an anchor for the last time in 2001. But he continued to be on for some analysis, and he was on for the 40th anniversary of CNN in 2020. Bernard Shaw died on September 7th at the age of 82. He leaves behind his wife, his family, and the millions of people he impacted for the greater as a correspondent and as an anchor person. As far as I'm concerned, not only is Bernard Shaw an automatic slam dunk first rounder in whatever Hall of Fame gets set up for television journalists, but he's also the role model for today's anchor people, for today's journalists, who they should be in this day and age. We need to have more Bernard Shaws around, more anchors and correspondents who don't put their biases, who don't put their favorites into their reporting or their anchoring. They just give you the news straight. They give you the news clearly. They give you all sides as much as possible, given the deadline constraints of the medium, and that you take it from there. To paraphrase Bernie, the skies of heaven are now illuminated with his presence. And I'm sure he is having a great time reminiscing with the other pioneers of television journalism about what they all went through here on Earth. Godspeed, Bernie. Thank you for everything you contributed. You're the greatest in my eyes. Again, thank you to our guests from Wedding Season for being with us. Again, Wedding Season now playing on Hulu, on smart TV sets and smart devices. And don't forget, tonight, Primetime Emmy Awards, that's 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific Time, simulcast on NBC and on Peacock with Kenan Thompson, the host. We'll be back with you on Thursday. Joining us will be Lorenzo Ruiz, the executive producer of the new program running on script stations around the country today, Afternoon Focus. We also hope to have the chief business officer of Trusted Media Brands working on the brand-new service At Home with the Family Handyman, Cameron Celeste. And we also hope to have the organizer and founder of the New York Latino Film Festival going on right now, continuing through this coming weekend, Callisto Chinchilla. And coming up Friday on our program, we will have from the Hearst Venture, very local, overseer Andrew Fitzgerald, and from TV Coins, The service out to launch new plumbing networks and have you watch them off the bat, Chief Executive Officer Yasi Alami and Chief Revenue Officer Gustavo Mara. And 1 week from today, one of the kingpins of True Crime Television, Scott Weinberger. If you came in late on today's episode, you want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's blogtalkradio.com/televised. Remember, our episodes are also available 24/7 on our website, tomorrowwillbetelevised.onpodium.com. That's tomorrowwillbetelevised.onpodium.com. And if you have a question about the world of television you'd like us to answer, go to the bottom of the screen, use that question blurb at the bottom, get the question to me, and if we use your question on the air, you, of course, will get the credit. Remember, you can also check us out 24/7, a few minutes after we go off the air here. We're on podcasts. We're available at places like the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, TuneIn.com, Spreaker Podcast, Podcast.Google.com, Podvine.com, Apple TV, also on Vizio Smart TV sets through Amazon Music, and so many more great leading podcast platforms. We love hearing from you. What do you think about our show today? What's your thoughts with the future of television, including what Bob Chapek has to say about what may be the future, the big future, for Disney Plus? Let's hear from you. Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Remember to enclose your name and where you're emailing from. Use that email to be in our classic trivia question. One more time, the question, who composed and performed the theme song for Chico and the Man? simonapple04@yahoo.com. You can also catch me on social media on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. Facebook, LinkedIn, Simon Applebaum. Twitter at UBC Simon, TWBT. That's UBC Simon, TWBT. Remember, we love hearing from you. And don't forget, when you respond to us, we respond back to you within 24 hours. Why? Because what you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed here are those of the participants. They are not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio and other distributors of this program. Andy Cho is B-Charge General Manager. Dave Sonberg is Head of Content. Website service provided by On Podium, the Internet's new podcast outpost. Guitarist Vakas is our web coordinator. For Tomorrow We Televise, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Good luck to all the nominees up for tonight with the Primetime Emmy Awards at Los Angeles. Again, I will be in the virtual press room with NBC and other journalists. We hope to talk to some of the winners, and if we have some merriting comments, we'll have them on our next show Thursday. Anyway, have a great, great rest of tonight and rest of the week, too. We'll be back on Thursday, second of our three shows this week, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tuner Radio, and all of our podcast destinations and our website on onpodium.com. Whatever you're up to now and then, please make it safe and make it great. If you haven't been vaccinated, please check in with your doctor, check your medical situation. Remember, there's a lot of treatments, a lot of alternatives available to shots and boosters. And they're available in some cases at your local pharmacy, in some cases free of charge, and in some cases without a prescription. And then make a great choice, your choice. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.